Hello and welcome to Matchsticks, the microphones for the week of April 19th, 2011. I'm your host, Justin Azevedo, on Twitter at AzevedoJ. This is our season review podcast. Who is with me this evening?
Robert Cleve, beautiful, not quite downtown Winnipeg, Manitoba. Twitter handle, RM Cleve.
Duncan Clark, I hit the post, hitthepost.ca. I'm at G Duncan Clark, and hit the post Twitter is at hit the post.
I'm Kent Wilson for various sites, including flamesnation.ca. My Twitter handle is Kent_Wilson.
Haley from Matchsticks and Gasoline, MG_Haley on Twitter.
And Mike from Hit the Post, and I don't have a Twitter handle, so.
Because you're lame like that and old. So we'll just start off, I guess, talking. This is a pretty casual show tonight. We're just going to go over a quick season review for the Flames, you know, what we think went well for the Flames this year, what obviously didn't go so well, and I think it'll be pretty clear by the end of the podcast that the didn't go so well will be a little bit more talked about than the went well. So I guess I can start off with just saying that although the season's performance was disappointing this year, it was an improvement over last year's, at least points-wise. So there is that positive, but pretty much everything else, aside from certain players having excellent performances, like Mark Giordano, was pretty shitty this year.
Well, that's not true. We got rid of Sutter.
That's a very good point.
Back of the year, that's the first thing I think of. I mean, as much as things went wrong on the ice for a lot of reasons, and as much as there were a number of moves that we weren't happy about, and the bottom line is this team had to turn around. That was something that had to happen. And say what you will about the remaining members of the management team, step one has gone into place. Now we just have to wait another 10 years for everything else to happen, right?
It was a horrible year, really. Like, I mean, there were so many times that I was just ready to give up on the team. So I'm happy to see it over. I'm ready for them to tear it down.
Mm-hmm. And there are improvements in a few areas that weren't necessarily consistent over the course of the year. Like, for example, goal scoring, which was probably more of a symptom of like percentages correcting themselves since them being at the bottom of the league last season. But overall, pretty disappointing, and glad to have the opportunity for things to change in the off season.
Yeah, I thought the team was actually generally better than it was last year, and I put a lot of that on the improvements of Brent Sutter. Now, you know, post Daryl Sutter, there's been some rumors that Daryl had his hands in the pie, and that's why Brent was not free to play his players like he should have. Well, that's probably why we saw, you know, Stales with Bomeister last year in the top four, which is at the time was just such a baffling decision. And now, I mean, at the time I thought Brent was just trying to figure things out, but now it seems that maybe Daryl was, you know, dictating things from on high. So.
Well, it doesn't just seem that way. I mean, it certainly explains a lot of things, but, you know, some of the recent pieces coming out in the press have been seem to underline or at least intimate that that was going down, or, I mean, pretty clearly saying that that went down, and it explains a lot. I mean, particularly you take a look at the coaching history of Brent Sutter and the decisions that he was making, a lot of the things that were happening seemed pretty unusual, and I think, you know, what happened in the second half of the year says a lot about, you know, when Brent Sutter was announced as the coach of this team, I was pleased. I mean, having followed his career, watched him coach Red Deer, watching what he did with the Devils, and this was a guy who I was happy to become the coach. And after the sort of baffling year and a half that existed, I mean, that explains a lot of things.
I was going to say one of the most positive things that I've seen just recently, now that we're at the end of the season, is this prospect roundup that Kent was writing about the other day. Some of those prospects, they're not as bad as I would have thought. Like Erickson's looking excellent. Howes, Reinhardt, even Wall when he's healthy. Like some of these guys, Brody, like these guys could be real NHLers at some point. Maybe not all-stars, but I'm actually impressed with the cast that we've got in the minors right now.
It's the first time in a while that we've had some decent-looking prospects, which is very encouraging.
I don't know. I look at, if I'm trying to be realistic about it, in the next 2 years, the most likely two guys to play, again, are defensemen. At the NHL level, we're talking about Brody and Erickson, obviously.
Yeah.
The forwards just aren't there. Maybe Max Reinhardt turns out to be a player. Maybe Ryan Howes does, although his skating just makes me a little nervous. Beyond that, man, it's a bunch of plumbers up front. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't do things via free agency or other sources to fill that hole. But if someone's looking for skill to come from the current level of draftees that the Flames have, it's certainly not going to be up front. It's going to be those two defensemen, and then otherwise you're scratching. And I think that's got to be the long-term concern going forward.
Yeah, there's no real replacements for the likes of Jerome McGinley in the current Flames prospect pool. There just isn't. I mean, I wrote for Hockey's Future for a while, and I was actually doing Nashville's system before I did the Flames. And I went through their prospects for a little bit, and it just blew me away. I mean, they had this huge collection of guys on both the back end. They had a couple of goalies. I mean, and then I'd look at the Flames draft pool and go, oh, man, this doesn't even compare. So the Flames definitely do have a couple of nice little pieces in there. But, I mean, most other prospect pools are much deeper. Trust me.
Yeah, when you trade your draft picks away forever, that's going to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no way around it. And obviously they had a few busts along the way too, some fairly famous ones, particularly kind of before the lockout. But I don't know how they're going to fix that problem in the medium term, because teams are hoarding draft picks more than they ever have, except at the deadline when they'll kick away a second rounder for a decent, you know, kind of free agent to be. Teams aren't trading first rounders unless, you know, they're really kind of going for it the way LA did this year when they traded for Penner.
How do you think that's going to go moving forward? Like today, I mean, we saw these couple of assistant coaches that weren't renewed. Like, are they going to clean house in the scouting department, do you think?
I think that's kind of what they did last summer, right? Because they fired, like, six scouts or something, brought in a new head scout. So I can't really see them disposing of their scouting department again.
At least not the pro scouting side of it.
Yeah.
Goulet is the one that came in last year, and Todd Button's the amateur scout head or whatever that's been there for almost 10 years. So I wouldn't be surprised to see a change on the amateur side of it, but I don't think the pro side of it will. It'll be pretty stagnant over the summer. They offered McLennan a different position in the organization. What position that is isn't totally clear yet, and I haven't heard anything about Cookson thus far, but aside from those two guys, I don't think the coaching staff will be changing too much, because I'm pretty sure they are still paying Keenan for this year.
As far as the scouts go, it may just depend on who's in the big chair. I mean, if Feaster finally gets anointed as the guy, maybe he'll bring in his own guys, he'll do a clean out, or if they hire someone else, you know, GMs like to bring along their own guys, so you might see a you know, total cleaning out of like the Sutters in the scouting department. It wouldn't surprise me to see Todd Button go either, because he's been there for a long time, and the Flames have been a terrible drafting team underneath them. So,
well, that's the thing. I mean, what keeps him around, and honestly, what kept him around through Daryl is a little bit flummoxing. The only thing I can think of is that he was a subservient. He just did what Daryl told him to do, which obviously was something that was valued in the organization.
Yeah, I suspect it was more a question of guys that had jobs in name only.
Yeah,
and they had input, but
sure,
you know, not Daryl was pulling the strings. Straight, right?
Oh, yeah. So we look at the up and down the Flames rosters, and just this year, guys obviously had good seasons, and there's guys that had not so good seasons. And, you know, just starting off with the guys that had good seasons, Curtis Glencross, obviously, in there, although held it a bit by his shooting percentage, was, I think, finished at 18.1. Mark Giordano, Michael Backlund, Alex Tanguay, for at least for the price of the contract, definitely had an excellent season. Olli Jokinen had a better season than last year, but overall, we still all hate him, so fuck him.
and he's really funny looking, right?
He is. Looks like a monkey. But
his season wasn't good enough to change my mind about him. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, that's quite accurate, Kent. But aside from those four or five guys I just named, maybe,
and Jerome.
Well, and Jerome had an excellent point-getting season, yes, but, I mean, obviously there's still some times where the play dies on his stick, and, I mean, he's not able to go against the tough comp guys in the league anymore and still be able to to perform beyond expectations or whatever.
David Moss.
He was unfortunate he suffered the injuries he did, particularly after that run just before the end of the season there. I mean,
yeah,
it was great to see him come back, and then it died with that injury. And, you know, he's a guy who really had a renaissance I didn't see coming.
Yeah, he has terrible luck with injuries since he started his career, basically.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah, he's had one full season.
How did that injury even happen? He tripped over a rut in practice?
Yeah. Like, just practice, yeah.
Hit a rut in the ice in practice.
Too bad. Well, I guess maybe Brendan Morrison you can chuck in there too. But, I mean, most of his points were put up when he was that third line center. But, I mean, when he was moved up to the top line with Tanguay and Iginla, you can kind of tell that he just kind of stayed back from the play. Like, he let Iggy and Tanguay do their thing. And, I mean, kind of dispelled the notion that we needed a true number one center for those guys. We just need some guy that'll, you know, let those two work together. And Morrison was sound enough defensively to take away that part of the worries for that top line.
Well, this Morrison was just good by comparison. I mean, because Jokinen again was a disaster, and Stajan was horrendous this season, especially on the top line. Morrison was just sort of by default the best option, but most of his underlying numbers, which we'll look at in depth this summer, were mediocre at best. So if I hear a lot of people sort of banging the drum to re-sign Brendan Morrison, and I honestly hope the team doesn't do that.
What he ended up doing was filling a role that had to be filled by the time, and that they weren't going to be able to acquire and trade or from the farm. Right. I mean, they needed a player who could step in between to Tanguy and Iginla and not get in the way. And yeah. And he did it. I mean, like, you know, you got to give him credit for that. He certainly wasn't. He was more than a liability in that situation. And you know, I think I certainly was concerned he would just be he'd be an anchor all year. But that's kind of faint praise. I mean, you're like, well, you know, he wasn't the worst in that spot. It's not exactly what you want to be saying. Yeah, exactly.
I think assuming Tanguy gets re-signed, they can afford to use a guy like that in that center role. If he doesn't, you know, they're kind of screwed. They actually need someone who can really influence the play and be a decent first line center, right?
And I think the question about Morrison is really heavily weighted on what the organization thinks that Lanco can do next year. If they think that he can still fill that number one center position, you have Matt Stajan, who, let's be honest here, is not going to get moved based on his contract and the way he played this year. You have Olli Jokinen signed to a $3 million contract next year, and you have Mikael Backlund, right? I mean, so you have three centers right there. You'd have to add Morrison and maybe Moss playing center. Okay. Morrison is 38 and he's coming off he even had surgery on his ACL yet, but that's a very major injury. And, you know, we don't know how he's going to be able to perform at advanced quote unquote age, at least for an NHL player. Like, you know, is he going to be able to come back and play with the same effectiveness as he did this year? I use effectiveness loosely, as he wasn't really that effective underlying wise.
If they think Lanco is healthy by about August, I don't think Brendan Morrison gets a sniff. Unless they can trade Stajan. Like, I just don't see it happening. There's no spot for him.
No.
Even if he comes back at, I mean, the one thing that happens if, because of his injury, and this is bad for him, obviously, had he stayed healthy, he probably would have gotten a decent contract, north of $1 million for a year. Who signs him now for much more than the minimum coming off that injury? And who signs him before October like he was last year?
Even if they can trade Stajan, I mean, if Lanco is back. I mean, I just don't see when you have, you know, you got another year out of Mike Backlund, and you've got, you still have Olli Jokinen under contract. Like, I'd much rather, you know, run a kid out there.
Lanco, I guess, is that we saw him in a pretty small sample size at the end of the season. He was good, but like, he's going to be able to hold up over the course of a whole season. I mean, he's going to be 35 this summer, I think. So
I think so, yeah.
I guess that's a question there, too.
What's his role going to be?
I swear he's going to be the hard minute center.
Yeah, well, but that doesn't mean he's playing with Jerome and say.
No, it doesn't. Not
right?
at all. Huh?
I think towards the end of the year, we had Backlund playing on the top line mostly with Jerome, except for a couple spurts where Lanco was playing on the top line. And yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if next year they try to force that and they go Tanguy, if they re-sign Tanguy, Tanguy, Iginla, Backlund, and then on the second line, Lanco, Moss, and whomever is his other winger. And as you said, Kent, I think that he does become the top minute center again.
Look, unless they go for a full-on rebuild and they decide that, which I wouldn't endorse. I mean, I'm not a fan of the tear it up strategy, considering that Tanguy has already said he's going to take the hometown discount. Unless he's lying, they'd be complete fools not to bring him back. Unless they don't bring back Iginla, in which case all bets are off.
Right.
And that's, I think, you're probably about the full-on rebuild, which again I don't endorse. So
I have a question for you guys. What do you think about Stajan? Like, can you rehabilitate Matt Stajan? Like, can he be the player he's supposed to be?
So he's not as bad as he was this past season, but I'm not sure he's as good as he was in Toronto, in those Toronto years when he was putting up 50 points, right? So he's never going to live up to his contract, that's for sure. But on this team?
Is that for sure? Like, why is he failing right now?
You want to believe the boss. He's out of shape, right? That was the first thing Sutter said in his postseason conversations. He said, this guy's got to get in better condition. He's not where he needs to be an NHL player. Well, and that just drives me nuts.
That's stunning at his age. And I mean, that's a veteran coming in and not
exactly
being ready to...
And a guy who just trousered about $4.5 million this year in actual dollars.
Well, then plus,
and you're not ready.
You had the entire season to work up the conditioning, and like he was playing just as bad as he was at the end of the season as he was at the beginning of the season. So why did he not get better conditioning wise throughout that period of time?
Yeah, at that salary figure, I'm thinking the guy, you know, if you have to get on the bike and hit the gym, like, you do it, right?
You got to remember that, you know, that he's not the first guy to come in. And, you know, assuming this is true, like, you think about Dustin Penner a couple of years ago, with the same complaint. You think about Kyle Wellwood with the same complaint. Not that they're, I mean, actually, Keith they're probably Kachuk. All but the same player, Keith Kachuk. I mean, Dustin Penner's probably, I mean, of the guys I mentioned in Kachuk, I mean, those are pretty strong players now and then, you know, over top of Wellwood and Stajan. But these are guys who then, you know, figured it out and came back in the right amount of shape. You don't know what a guy's thinking. You don't know if he's got the right motivating factor. This was Stajan's first big contract. Like, you know, it's, you'd hope that, I mean, I think there's, I mean, from the skill side of things, like, Stajan's not a bad player. Like, I mean, you know, 60 points even on a bad Toronto team is nothing to scoff at as a guy who can put some points on the board. And I think we've seen stretches where he's played not so bad hockey, but, you know, if the commitment isn't there, then you have to figure out a way to get it out of him, or you have to figure out a way to get rid of him.
I'm sure there was a little bit of bad luck involved at times this season, but there's no excuse for him being as bad as he was for the majority of the season.
No, I mean, I was just going to say, I don't really grasp the mindset. But let's accept that, you know, Duncan's point is basically right, that he's not the first guy that's come in, got a big contract, and all of a sudden just the motivation wasn't quite where it should have been. But let's accept all that. How healthy was he this year? And I'm just going off memory now, but he took some terrible shots. He was out to start the year with a bad shoulder. He took that shot from Stahl in New York where, it looked like he was just about dead. I really wonder how healthy he was. And obviously, if your shoulders are bothering you, it's pretty hard to work out. I mean, you keep your legs going, but pretty tough to hold your strength. So maybe there's some stuff going on, some underlying things that we don't know about. Beyond that, even if all that stuff is true, he's got a long way to go from where he finished the season to be a worthwhile investment for the team.
People are actually talking about buying his contract out. I mean, not actually writers, but moronic commenters are talking about, you know, oh, we should just buy out Matt Stajan and Corey Saric and Nicholas Hagman and Aleš Kotelik and have like $7 million on the books for the next 7 years or whatever. The notion that he is going to be moved or bought out or really done away with in any way is kind of ridiculous, especially when you have boat anchors like Kotelik and Hagman on the team already. Like, there's only so much money the team can afford to piss away in the AHL or in Europe.
Yeah, unless they can trade Stajan, I think he's stuck on this club, which is terrible news.
And I mean, that's even more difficult given that he has a limited no trade clause, maybe a full no trade clause. Right. So.
Jesus Christ.
Well, okay, I mean,
the reaction from everybody right there says it all.
look, I mean, worst case scenario here for this team is that this is, and I'm saying this from sitting on my couch in Toronto, this is the Toronto Maple Leafs like 4 or 5 years ago. The team that's missed the playoffs 2 years in a row. It's got an expensive goaltender. It has an aging star who's still a good player, but who doesn't have anyone really to play with long term. Got a number of anchor contracts, and it has no prospects in the tank.
No prospects. Yeah.
I mean, that is the worst case scenario for this team. And ownership that seems to be somewhat clueless as to how to deal with it. I mean, and if Jay Feaster or whoever comes in next is John Ferguson Jr. and not the Pat Quinn character who was around for a while, I mean, there's a lot of striking similarities. That's, I mean, you know, the more you draw this comparison, the more apt it seems, and the more concerning it is that, you know, 5 years from now, it's going to be 2016, and we're just going to be with a shimmer of hope that we're back to where we are talking about things right now. Mm-hmm. Just about made the playoffs, almost there, got a couple good young players, and maybe next year. That's a pretty likely scenario as of now. That's a little troubling.
Disturbing. Depressing.
Sorry, everybody. Go Flames!
Well, Robert referred to the team as a dead-end team, I think, in the comments of Flames Nation recently, because they're talking about maybe trading Kiprusoff and getting Vokoun in the door, and Robert said, well, why would Vokoun come here?
Yeah, same thing I said about Brad Richard. You know, when people fantasize about that, guys have to have some sort of incentive. I mean, there's players that are going to be left out in August that need a place to sign, but I'm sorry, if the money's roughly equal, why on earth would you sign with this team absent some pretty major surgery between about June 15th and June 30th? What's the incentive? What's the upside for a player who's really trying to win? And God knows Thomas Vokoun has played in some terrible spots the last couple of years. I can't imagine. Maybe he'll go back to Florida. Maybe that's good enough. Maybe that works for him, but if he's actually interested in winning, there's got to be 15 or 20 teams ahead of Calgary.
Well, and Thomas Wilkun's older than Kiprusoff is already. So if people are wanting to make a move, like, you know, over the teams have to get younger or whatever, why would you bring in a goaltender that's a year and a half, almost 2 years older?
Well, you might do it for short money, Justin, if you thought you could get rid of Kipper's contract.
I mean, we'll talk more about that kind of stuff next week in the offseason preview. Like I was talking earlier about the guys that had good seasons and the guys that had bad seasons. And I mean, there are some guys that had those gray area seasons. Like we talked about Stajan, was he really that bad or was he hurt conditioning wise, whatever. A guy like Corey Saric, is it, you know, he's been battling nagging injuries. He's just too slow now. He just can't handle any competition whatsoever. I know, Kent, you kind of hate Corey Saric, so.
Well, he drove me nuts at the end of the year. I mean, I looked at his underlying numbers today when I published that thing on defense, and they were actually surprisingly good considering the way I thought he played this year. But, you know, part of that is playing, I'm pretty sure, playing with Giordano all year.
Oh, for sure.
The frame on the second line. But, you know, Corey Saric is still an NHL defender. His problem is he's getting older, he's getting slower, and he's not worth his ticket.
$2 million off his contract and make him a six defenseman, right? Then you're fine.
Yeah.
Plus, somebody should take a look at the number of goals that were scored while he was in the penalty box. Like he always takes dumb penalties.
Yeah, but he doesn't take dumber penalties than Glenn Cross and Bork do, and I guarantee Bork and Glenn Cross have more goals scored against them when they're sitting in the penalty box, because those guys are both fucking idiots.
It's those three guys. They're always horrible.
Well,
right?
And Tanguay sometimes too, you know, takes a opportunity.
Fucking penalties,
yeah.
Always.
Yep.
You got guys that have obviously some discipline problems on the team. Most of the time, they're able to balance it out with their play. Well, not this year with Bork in that case and Sarge. What does everybody think about Rene Bork? Like, he obviously had a terrible year compared to last year.
Sure. I mean,
he was one of those gray area players in the sense that he had a terrible year, but also put up 27 goals.
Yeah. Like,
how
does that? Like, just looking at his season, you know, remembering back to the games that he played and, you know, remembering, oh, that he did this to piss me off, this, this, and this. And then seeing that he did have 27 goals, but though most of those goals are a result of streakiness, like, you know, the 10-game streak that he'll put up 13 or whatever, and then he'll disappear for 20 games at a time. And I wonder if that is just based on his style of play. He's that, you know, quote-unquote power forward or whatever, and sometimes he maybe pushes a little bit too far and squeezes the stick too hard, cliches out the yin-yang.
With Bork, I don't think there was any power to his game for most of the year. I mean, there was flashes every so often. But he didn't even look like the same player that he was last season playing with Lanco. I mean, this year I'm going to write something on how hockey isn't a game of totals. It's a game of ratios or differentials. And I think Rene Bork is a great example of that because he had 27 goals last year for his career year.
Yeah.
And those are 27 much more valuable goals, I guarantee you, than the 27 goals he got this year because he was a much worse player this year in all the underlying numbers.
Yeah, Lanco, Dawes, and Bork last year put up 55 goals between the three of them against tough competition. This year, Dawes is gone, Lanco's hurt most of the year, and Bork puts up 27 goals against mostly third and fourth line guys.
I guess Bork is another player where there's constant doubts about his health, just being the injury-prone guy that he is. I mean, no excuse for having a generally terrible season when he didn't miss that much time with injury. But again, there's those underlying things that you might not have known about, like with Stajan.
This season was the first time in Bork's career that he had 80 games, and he played 80 games this season. And he's been in the league for, 7 years? Like, you look at Bork's injury history and the amount of games that he's played over his career, and then you look at a guy like Aginla, obviously not Aginla and Bork are in different leagues, but Aginla's missed 42 games in, 13 or 14 seasons, and Bork's is the first time he's played 80 games. Like you said, Haley, he is a extreme, like, you know, there's always questions about his health, and rightfully so.
I can add to Bork that he played with Jokinen all year, right? So aside from when Jokinen was playing with Moss and Glenn Cross, and that was not coincidentally his best segment of the season. Yeah, Bork and Jokinen, when they played together, they actually did play a lot of tougher minutes for the Flames because Sutter liked to give Aginla the higher ground as much as possible. And of course, they got murdered. So that could be part of it.
You look at the season that you were just talking about, Jokinen, he had, and like I stated earlier, we all still don't really like him as a player, but he had a much better season this year, and he wasn't extremely terrible in the role that he was given by Brent in the second half of the season after Darryl left and he wasn't being forced to play with Aginla.
No, he wasn't. I mean, ideally, you'd want to play where Stajan is now, right? Yeah. On the third line, and you know, not really playing against anyone. I think he'd be less of a detriment. I mean, most of his underlying numbers are still amongst the worst among the forwards on the team. And part of that speaks to the circumstances he played in. But, I mean, Sutter didn't have an ideal solution this year without Lanko. So, yeah, I mean, I think Jokinen really did simplify his game a little bit this year. He wasn't doing stupid loops through the defensive zone, and he didn't give it away at the opposition blue line every second time he carried it up the ice. So there was some definite improvement. He's never going to be the player he was supposed to be when they acquired him the first time. So
that Philadelphia game was the high point of his Flames career.
Yes, first game.
First game.
It's all downhill.
Okay, I have to offer a very slightly contrarian point of view to my friend Mr. Wilson.
No problem.
I've got the numbers from Time on Ice. I scraped those the other day from Vic's site. Only Jokinen's tied numbers are not bad. I'm just looking at them right now. No, they're not bad. His Fenwick percentage is like 526. Hmm. I'm thinking about the guys he's playing. He played the toughest competition. He certainly didn't have the percentages, okay? I think his PDO states about 97, which is obviously not good. His shooting percentage is about what you'd expect for a guy that hits 20 goalposts a season. But
he was more than 20. No question it was more than 20.
Well, but also I look at the goaltending numbers behind him, and God, am I going to get into this tomorrow. Did he have a great year? No, he's still a little yoke. But he really wasn't that bad. And if you look at the circumstances he was in and what they paid him, I'm not going to kill the guy. I just can't. He's not the primary evildoer. I'll just leave it at that.
I think where I'm getting my numbers from, Bob, is the hockey analysis site. And the Corsi tied for him, a 5-on-5, is actually just 502. And that's Corsi. It's not Fenwick. But the only people worse than him on the team in terms of forwards by this site's reckoning are again, Letange and Bork.
So Vic's got him at 514.
Okay.
Yeah, Vic's got him at 5. His string is shots 544, Fenwick 526, mm-hmm. Corsi 514. These are all EV tied, okay?
Yeah.
Save percentage 903, shooting percentage 6.8. That's his string.
Yeah, the percentages didn't help him at all this year either. So.
No. But look. He's not an ideal hard minute center. This guy ain't Franz Nielsen. I'm not trying to make that case. But he gets buried.
Yeah, often he got
legitimately, but there's limits to what people should really expect from that guy. And frankly, the fact that Brent Sutter got as much out of him as he did probably says a lot about Brent Sutter too.
And I think the only other thing we have to look at this summer is Oahu analysis with him and Moss and Glenn Cross. I mean, we'll see how he did aside from those guys and with them. And
it won't be as good without them. Believe me, I've done some of that stuff too. Like stuff's not working on Vic's site, but there's stretches of games where we know they played together and the numbers for all three of them are out of sight. They're like, I'll break that down tomorrow, but you'll see numbers, in the 57-58% range for those guys in stretches. And it's obvious that's where they were playing together. So there's definitely an element. Those guys definitely helped his game when they played together.
So just the last thing I guess I want to add is the play of some of the young kids this year towards the end of the year, like Greg Nemish and Fancy Pants Lance, Stefan Meyer earlier in the season. I mean, obviously sample size is a major consideration with this, but and Haley talked about it in a post a couple weeks back on Matchsticks. They weren't completely terrible for the roles that they were playing. And I mean, they were mainly fourth line roles, sheltered 10 minutes a night, but it is encouraging to see that, in a spot, we're able to call up guys in the AHL that are, maybe not performing to the way that we want them to and still have them come up and not be a complete liability for the team.
Yeah, it's hard to comment on performances like that just because, Sutter was very careful with those guys. They only played about 7 minutes a game, and they didn't play against anyone of any note. But you're right, they didn't look terrible. Like when Chris Chucko used to come up to the NHL, the two or three times he did, it was always a freaking disaster. It didn't matter what role he was playing. It's like, oh, get him off the ice, and they weren't that bad. So, yeah, there's some positive there.
Booma definitely had some good games that I recall, obviously. I think I mentioned the one against Vancouver was especially good, but I can't really say I observed too much of the same from Nemec aside from the game where he got his first NHL point. Yeah.
Bringing Nemec up at the end of the year was probably so that they just picked what they had to pick, and they wanted to give a guy a shot who wasn't getting a lot of ice time. It was probably too soon. I think, you know, yeah. Nemec is a guy who has some development to do. I don't think you're not saying this guy is done, but he's not a guy who's going to come in the NHL in his first year in the A and come in and make a difference of any sort. And, you know, honestly, Bouma, I think, was a pleasant surprise in that he was able to keep up with the competition as well as he had, given, you know, sort of his background. I mean, this is a guy who may turn into, you know, the next Derek Nystrom. But I mean, that's not exactly saying like there's a great future for this team when you're talking about that is a, you know, a big thing. And I think it's Eric Nystrom, but, you know, he's playing third, fourth line time in Minnesota now. So there's not a whole lot to be said about the kids this year. You know, it's kind of unfortunate. The funny thing I was thinking earlier this year, when there was a bit of a run there where Adam Party was playing the 5-6 defense pairing and he was doing pretty well. I was like, oh, it's good to see Party doing well. And he's like, the guy's like 27 now.
Yeah.
I mean, like that's your prospects. I mean, it's not the most promising thing.
And I mean, you don't really realize it, and you're talking about Party. You don't really realize that he's that old just because of the amount of time that he's missed with injuries over his career. Right? It's like, you know, oh, maybe that guy's 4 years in the league, but no, it was drafted but a decade ago.
It talks to what the way the Flames have developed prospects for quite a long time. I remember when Party made the team 2 years ago. I can't remember whose blog it was, but the headline was "It's Party Time," and I was like, "Wow, crazy!" You know, Party actually made the team. Oh, and he's 25. Like, yeah. You know, it's like David Moss was the same way.
I guess both of them were late round picks too.
Why the hell can't the Flames pick NHLers for their first rounders? For God's sake!
Yeah. Well, right.
And although Michael Backlund had a nice showing this year, so
and more Swedes, right, Kent?
That's right.
Mika Zibanejad.
Pick from Sweden, that's it.
Mika Zibanejad. I'm on that bus.
And player development, really, that was one of the bigger Sutter issues, right? I mean, Giordano was basically developed in spite of Daryl Sutter, right?
Pretty much, yeah.
He developed in Russia.
Yeah, like he mostly developed so that he could give Sutter the finger.
Finger by signing a $4.02 million contract for 5 years?
Well, I mean, he had really there was no choice. He was too good, right? Yeah. So
can't let a guy like that go.
Wasn't he undrafted?
He was playing in Lowell with the Lock Monsters.
Lowell Lock Monsters. Yeah, right.
And they signed him to that AHL contract, and the rest is history, I guess, with Gio. But if anybody else has anything to add, just randomly, I guess, about the Flame season, just thoughts.
You know, it was good to see the 1981 to 1990, what was it, 1994 jersey come back, because it's the only good one they've ever had. It's the Oilers, who are rumored to be going to the white matcher to their retro blue next year. Is any sign of things to come? And that's positive, because holy cow, the Flames have looked ugly for like most of my life, and I really want them to look good again.
I'm starting the campaign for the Horsehead jersey back as the official jersey.
No.
You guys all suck. I love that jersey.
That's
awesome.
Hideous.
Just awesome.
I had a friend who called it the snot rocketing horse jersey. Hideous.
The sad thing is I have one of those because it came out when they were still wearing the pedestals, and the pedestals were so ugly that it was like, well, this is better than other before, I guess.
We haven't really talked about Kiprusoff, and Robert has, a big long post coming up on him. So, I mean, something on that, Bob, would probably be apropos.
Yeah, I mean, tomorrow, actually, I'm going to look at the stuff that I scraped off of X site. And believe me, Kipper's a big part of it. We'll kind of preview it. I took the top 10 teams and looked at their EV tied numbers. And, of course, it's not just about shooting. It's about stopping. Mika Kiprusoff had a really bad year compared to those teams. Compared to those teams' goalies, so there's just no way to sugarcoat it. He's getting paid a lot, and the production isn't there, and this is 3 out of the last 4 years. I don't know. That's a millstone contract now that I just don't see the Flames getting out of. He has to be better, and I'm pretty sure firing Jamie McLennan really isn't the answer.
It was all McLennan's fault.
You don't think he has a big impact on a veteran goal?
But he was a genius last year when Kipper bounced back, right?
Yeah.
And they got rid of Marcou. Yeah, there's no good answer here. I don't know what kind of solution they have, but I'll be honest, if he was traded for anything where they didn't take salary back, I can't describe that as anything but a win. It's not going to happen, but that's the state that he's in, because right now he's pretty much a replacement level starter.
I mean, I guess the only hope is that you have someone like Carlson, maybe if he gets re-signed, or someone like Irving in the next couple of years that can step in to take his place. But other than that, there's no real hope for next year, I guess.
They got Yoni Orsho in the mix now too. I mean, and when you talk about what you can do with, like Robert says, like a replacement level goalie, I mean, I agree. I mean, it's a tough sell to get rid of him, even with taking on salary. But if I'm Jay Feaster or whoever, I'm calling Paul Holmgren the second that the Flyers get eliminated from the playoffs, because they have shown time and time again that they will be suckers for that. So that's your first and best hope, and then you never know who else might be foolish enough. But I agree, you can't treat him like he's going to be the answer, because it's not. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to say. I mean, this is a guy who has been the first steady goaltender the Flames had since Mike Vernon, and that was a long, long stretch in between.
I think the real reason that there's a low probability of him being traded is not necessarily his value on the market. I don't know what that is, but I think the organization still has itself convinced that he's the Kiprusoff of old. Yeah. He's the mythical Kiprusoff, and not the guy of the last 4 or 5 years who has been, you know, mediocre. And if they cling to that myth forever, that, I mean, they won't investigate other options, which is the main problem. I mean, Rob Kerr was on local radio today talking about what he'd do for the team, and he said, you know, I would keep Eginla and Kiprusoff for the rest of their contracts. And so it's the popular myth around here is still that Kiprusoff is a top end goalie in this league, and it's just not true.
I just feel so much better not listening to Calgary radio most of the time when that subject comes up.
really, when any subject about hockey comes up, unless it's Steinberg talking, they're probably not doing a very good job of it.
That's because Kent and I took him to the dark side.
Yes, you did. And I remember when you were starting on Flames Nation, you know, you read the post, it's like, oh yeah, Lanko's not, like, he even had an entire post saying why Lanko was not a number one center or whatever. And then eventually just from there, he's got to the point where he actually realizes this stuff matters and tells the story pretty well.
Yeah, Pat took to it pretty readily. I mean, he didn't really know what we were talking about when we arrived, but, you know, he didn't. He's told me. I had no idea what you guys were talking about. And then, you know, we had some email exchanges, and I met him personally, and he was surprisingly open-minded about everything. And he took to it like a duck to water. So it's actually been a pretty good partnership at the site.
Let's give the guy some credit. A lot of mainstream media people wouldn't have ever embraced this. They still won't. And he was willing to do it. And I mean, I'm sure that there are people he works with, like guys like Boomer and that are probably giving it to him all the time. And yet you know, he stuck with it. So good for him.
I think most of us still remember the great Lanko debate, kind of kicked it all off.
Well, that was back when RO was still posting too. And he's the most militant bastard in the Flames blogosphere, so he was all over poor Steinberg. But
RO was a very angry man.
Yes, he was.
Anybody else have anything to add?
You know, I hadn't really articulated that we're the Toronto Maple Leafs 5 years ago thought until tonight, and now I'm going to cry myself to sleep.
I think Duncan's kind of right. I don't think the Flames are quite as bad as the Leafs were. Maybe that's just hope over reality, but I just don't think they're quite as bad. I don't think they'll screw things up quite as badly. But there's a long way between being terrible like the Leafs became and being any good. And that's where I'm afraid they're just going to wallow in that sort of never-never land between about 11th and 19th in the league forever.
Like they did from 95 to 2003. And
worse than that, Justin, a team that might make the playoffs every second or third year, but really isn't any good.
So always gets 15th picks overall and never 6th and never it's tough.
I said this before, and this is the whole problem with the way, I mean, and I've heard too many Flames say this same sort of thing. I've heard Brent say this. Daryl was the king of it. It's like, you just got to get into the playoffs. You never know what happens. Like, that is absolutely the worst thing to aspire for. You aspire to be the Detroit Red Wings. You aspire to be the Pittsburgh Penguins. Don't think about getting into the playoffs. You think about getting into the playoffs comfortably and being extremely strong going into the playoffs, because you want to win the Stanley Cup. You don't get into the playoffs hoping you get a chance to win the Stanley Cup. That overall attitude has to change at the highest level.
You don't get to the finals very often without having home ice somewhere along the way. Yeah. You got to be in the top four of your conference, or else the odds of you winning just plummet.
Yeah,
I mean, it's fair to aspire to be mediocre if you're a hamstrung team for one reason or the other. You know, Nashville Predators, but, and I give Phoenix credit for what they're able to do with their budget. But the Flames, they don't have those issues. I mean, they had a very solid core for the last few years. They had an unlimited budget, and they only managed to be mediocre. And that's why Daryl Sutter was justifiably fired.
And I think every year since the cap's been implemented, except for maybe the first year in 05 and 06, the Flames have spent right to within $1.5 million or $2 million of the cap. And
yeah, they weren't far off in the first year either. It wasn't more than a few million bucks.
And you can't be getting the results they've been getting while spending that kind of money. It's plain and simple. No. Anyways, excellent talk today, everybody. Next week, we'll go a little bit into the off-season preview, you know, what we expect to see Flames go for in terms of UFAs, what we expect to see players coming back, and you know, draft picks coming up next year. Like I said, good talk tonight. Everybody, just say your Twitter handles again, because I can't remember all of them tonight. So start off with Robert.
RM Cleave on Twitter.
Kent?
Kent underscore Wilson at Twitter.
Duncan?
At G Duncan Clark, at Hit the Post.
Haley?
MG underscore Haley on Twitter.
Yeah, mike/idonthaveatwitterhandle.com.
And I'm at Azevedo J. Thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll talk to you again next week.